Hello and welcome to the Rambling Runner Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Chittum, and this is the podcast for all the dedicated amateur runners out there who are working hard to get better while balancing running with the rest of their lives. And this show is presented by ASICS. I am currently wearing the ASICS Keanu 30, my favorite max cushioning shoe. Now, this is not the only max cushioning shoe that they offer. This is just my favorite one. Keanu's have traditionally been the stability shoe, and they certainly are that, but they are much more than that. I don't need a stability shoe, but I love these shoes, that's for sure. I went for daily training and recovery runs. They have so much stack, but they're not mushy. They are just the right mix for me, and they really, really fit me well. That is for sure. Also, the upper is plush without being too heavy. So overall, there's nothing I would change about this shoe. Go check out this shoe and more at asics.com today. On the podcast today, we have Dave Proctor. This man is remarkable. Absolutely. He has the fastest time running across Canada. And what a journey it was, that's for sure. He details the whole thing in his new book, Untethered. It came out, I think, a couple months ago, but the audiobook came out this week. And it's fantastic. It really is. And I love talking to Dave. But I will say, we didn't get into like, all right, tell me about this. Like, basically, like reliving the entire journey. This was more about his approach to running, his approach to mindset, and all of the stuff that allowed him to do what he did without getting into like the nitty-gritty details of his journey. That's what his book is for. So go check out Untethered today. But in the meantime, listen to my podcast with Dave. All right, Dave Proctor, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Matt.
This is going to be a lot of fun. As I was just telling you, I think I was the first person to buy the audio book over on Audible, your book, Untethered, which is absolutely fantastic. I didn't realize that it actually went live on Audible like a minute before I bought it. I just figured it was there the whole time. I was telling you like, hey, I bought the audio book. And you looked at me like, wait, what? Like the thing just went live like 10 hours ago. I didn't realize because you had sent me a copy online, which I was perusing and going through it. But like, I'm just the worst reader in the world, but I can listen to things just fine. Oh. So I guess this is great. I feel like I'm like, you know, one of those people who follows a band before they become famous. Again, you're a very famous guy, but like I got in on the audiobook before other people, so I'm there.
You got the first edition, and yeah, I think it's a prerequisite to being a long distance runner. You have to be into audiobooks. So like you, I like audiobooks better than I do paperback. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Every year, again, we're not going to get into this part of it, nor are we going to talk about me the whole time. But I will say every year is one of my like, what am I going to do better this year? So I was like, I'm going to read books. Like, I'm actually going to read them. And yeah, I never do.
No.
Thank you for creating the audiobook, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I love reading. I'm just a bad sitter. You know, like I can't sit and read a book, but I can run and read a book or drive and read a book. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I feel the same way. And it's funny because like I will, you know, say I'll run past a certain area or I'll even drive down a road and I'll remember like different things that I've heard in those spots. Like I connect them to the physical location that I heard them. I remember listening to a podcast with my friend Lindsay Hine was interviewing Jordan Hesse. This was a while ago. Jordan Hesse hasn't been on a podcast in like 5 years. So like, you know, it was a long time ago, but I can still imagine the hill I was on when I was listening to this part of this interview. So it's funny how our brain connects those things.
No doubt. Flashbulb moments.
That's for sure. Well, Dave, you are someone who is an incredible runner, has done numerous things, set numerous records, and just has an august running background. So thank you so much for coming on to the show. Your book, Untethered, is about your 67-day journey running across Canada, transcontinental run. My goodness, breaking the record by 5 days. And that's a historic run. People might know Terry Fox, who did it many years ago. And, you know, like any transcon, it's an incredible journey, one that's different for every person, but at the same time, this amazing feat of going from one ocean to the other, especially for whether you're in Canada like you or the US like me, running across from ocean to ocean, it really is so symbolic of so many things. So first of all, thank you for coming on the show and thank you for sharing your journey, because we were talking about this offline already, is that when you were going through this process, and especially the people who'd done it before you, the idea of, you know, people following along the journey was something that is now in vogue. And we're talking about Paul Johnson earlier, who's going through the process right now. But there was a time where this was something you only found out about after the fact. So, you know, when you were going through this process and this wasn't your first attempt at the TransCon, what was your relationship to the PR side and just the media side. And also, I'm part and parcel of that is also, you know, the fundraising element too. Because if you are fundraising, then you obviously don't want to keep that, you know, hidden from people, because that kind of opposes the whole point of it.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's what we are seeing right now with Paul Johnson, is he's being very, very vocal. But as vocal as he's being, they're raising a ton of money for, you know, RWB, and which is huge, right? So it comes down to priorities, and you have to pick your priority, I think. So, you know, my story goes along, you know, there's two different stories. There's, you know, two different cities. 2018, you know, there was a national awareness campaign for, it was called Outrun Rare. And that was the year that only made it one third of the way across the country. You know, Canada's 4,448 miles long. It's second biggest country in the world.
Look at you and talking about miles. I know kilometers is your default, but look at you. You know who you're talking to, and you're altering the pitch to the American
audience.
There
you go. 7,159 kilometers. Not that I was counting, but, you know, it's what's amazing is that, you know, in 2018, I was arrogant and ignorant enough to think that I could do two things at once. I could break the Trans-Canadian speed record that was set by Al Howie, you know, 31 years before that. Of running 100 kilometers, you know, I think that's 62 miles a day for 72 days in a row. I could break that. I could do something that hard. And I could also run a national awareness and fundraising campaign at the same time. And I quickly realized within days of starting, you can't do both at the same time. You are not Jesus. You're not Herculean. You're a runner or you're a fundraiser. And you can't do both. And so 2018 was a rough go for many, many, many reasons that I write about in the book as well, too. But, you know, fast forward to 4 years later in 2022, when I made the second attempt and I was successful, averaging 66 miles a day or 105 kilometers for the 67 days in a row. You know, I was very quiet about the entire effort. There was no media outreach because why? Outside of my ego and telling people, hey, you should care about this. You should think this is really cool what I'm doing here. It was a distraction. I needed to stay insanely focused and have people that would do all of the things and treat me like a toddler out there on the highway so that I could accomplish, like clockwork, my 66 miles a day and stay on track for the Trans-Canadian speed record. If I wanted to go and fundraise for rare disease, I could do that after. If I wanted to go and be an advocate for rare disease, I could do that after. If I wanted to raise funds for cancer, I could do that after. But as of right now, I need to remain having 100% of my focus on the run. And for 67 days, I was in a funnel and I was insanely successful.
Yeah, you sure were. And you bring up a good point. Like, you can do a transcon and fundraise at the same time as long as you're not going for a speed record.
Correct. Yeah. Because I think the thing about transcons, and this is one thing that I think that a guy like Paul Johnson's realizing right now, is that you're competing out there with the clock. 24 hours in a day, that's all you got. And you got to sleep, you got to eat, you got to recover, you got to do body care, you've got to do all these things, but 24 hours a day, and you need to be insanely efficient. And that was your number one priority, was to create, you know, complete efficiency. Almost extreme efficiency out there, where that 30 seconds matters more than anything else in the world. And so, yeah, I think that there have been a ton of fundraisers that aren't linked to speed record attempts. And I freaking love that, because they raise $250,000 or $1 million or $2 million for these awesome charities that otherwise people would never hear about. I feel motivated to then go out and do their run in the afternoon because so-and-so in Australia is running across the country. Hey guys, keep it up, do more of that. But if you're going to break a speed record, you're breaking a speed record and that's it.
Yeah. You really have to be, you can't serve two masters at the same time in something like this.
No doubt.
And as someone, I'm saying this as someone who's like learned from you and from other people. Certainly I've never had tried anything along those lines, but you, again, I don't want to relive the whole book. That's why the book is there. Okay, but I do want to touch on certain things. And one of the things that you mentioned, you hinted at several points in the book, is that for you, the idea of, I wouldn't say goalposts, but like your idea of like, what is my limit, is something that has changed at many points in your life. Now, can you think back to your earliest, the earliest time when you thought, you know what, I think this is the limit, or like that you looked in the future and said, once I hit this, this will be my limit. I can't do more than that. Whether that's a per day thing or per month thing, maybe it's a race. Like I can never race longer than that. Or, you know, was ever like some preconceived notion where you're like, that was it. I was 100% sure at that moment that that was my limit. And now we look back on it and say, well, obviously that wasn't the case.
Well, I think there's two answers to that. I mean, and two different lives. It feels like, you know, back when I was 7 years old, my father was a big baseball fan, or softball. So, you know, back then he was kind of pitching windmill, that windmill sport. And, you know, my dad put a mattress on one wall in the basement and a pitching mound on the other, and sat in his chair and smoked a cigarette and drank his beer and told us to pitch 100 pitches a night. And, you know, the very first year that I was doing this, we went to, and there was this kid named Scotty Colenso. He was the best pitcher in all of Alberta. And we stood there watching the provincial gold medal final. And my dad just, you know, elbowed me and he says, next year, you're going to be better than him. And, you know,
no pressure, Dave.
No pressure. And next year I was. And, you know, we won a number of national titles and won top pitcher in Canada a couple times. But, you know, having your father believe in you and having your father, you know, and having that expectation, right? And it's pressure, but yet it also creates something, right? And I think a number of times in my running life, you know, those numbers, those, you know, I remember the 1 year at the World 24-Hour Championships in Torino, Italy. You know, I was running and I was hoping to break the Canadian record of, you know, in 24 hours. And there was an amazing thing that happened in the middle of the night where there was a power outage. And, you know, at that point, there was no lights on the course. And so, you know, they were giving out headlamps and I refused to take one because I thought of myself as a ninja, that I was going to be in the dark and I was going to. And I think at that point I was in 27th place. And by the time they got the lights up, I was in 9th place. And so, but that was an extended period of time in the middle of the night that, you know, you played a game in your head and your goal going into that race. I ended up running, you know, about 16 miles further in that race than I thought when my A goal could be. And so from that point forward, you're like, wow, okay, I'm far more capable than what I've given myself credit for. And if that was the case,
I'm going to pause you right there because that's interesting. Because yeah. It's not like this was like, hey, I went and did an ultra. I thought this was potentially in my wheelhouse, and then I did this. You were at the 24-hour World Championships. You were an extremely accomplished athlete who was incredibly dialed in to what your body can do, your training, projecting it out. I want to just set the stage, and I know you already know this, but just to set the stage for listeners, that it wasn't like you were a novice here and then you were just wrong. You were someone who was incredibly dialed in, maybe at the peak of your powers at that point, and you were still not able to accurately assess exactly where your limit was, even in that moment.
Well, and I think that we have these preconceived ideas of what emptying the tank would look like and what your physical limit is. And so for me personally, during that race, at the end of the race, you know, when in 24-hour race, you know, there's a gun that goes off in the end and you drop your pylon and they measure how many laps have you done plus the remainder of that last lap. And, you know, I was so proud, but I was also like, oh my God, I didn't empty my tank. So I exceeded, you know, I ran like 16 miles further than what I could have even thought of, like on my very best day of ever. But there was still more there. And I think that is when I started really believing that I could take down Al Howie's record of the Trans-Canadian speed record is, okay, I exceeded my own personal expectations by a lot. And before I was amazed by this Al Howie guy who could do this. Okay. Now some of those personal limitations are starting to be shed.
All right, let's talk about the back and forth that comes with this idea that, hey, we can do way more than we think, and maybe even way more than that even, is that there is also the yin and yang of this where, well, what if what I'm struggling, even doing what I'm doing now, right? Mm. So like, yeah, I'm talking as like a, you know, this hypothetical person who also might just be me. We're talking about this, right? Where it's like, all right, you tell me that I'm unlimited or some, you know, in the ballpark of that. But yet I'm struggling already. So how am I to wrap my head around these things at the same time? I was like, okay, you tell me this, but it's not as if like I'm just cruising along and everything's going smooth. And I'm like, oh, well, hey, I guess Dave's right. I can do way more. Even if I believe you, and maybe even if I do believe you full wholeheartedly, that makes short-term struggles even more, at least it has for me, made them even harder to get through. Of like, well, what the hell? Like, what am I doing wrong? Like, I'm keep getting stuck here. I could be doing X. I believe all these people, but I'm not. And I'm not only not there, I am light years away from being there. And there can be that frustration that comes with that.
Well, and I think that, Matt, you nailed it there. And then the ultimate question is identifying the reason for the struggle. And I think that that's where I try to get to in my book a number of different times in talking about mindfulness, is because we tend to believe that, you know, we wear a brand new pair of, you know, New Balance shoes and it's raining outside and we eat a banana before we go up for a run this morning and you have a terrible run and you're going to blame the banana, you're going to blame your shoes and you're going to blame the weather. That's crap. Like, I don't know about you, but every single time that I've failed, which is way more, than your listeners can count, I failed simply because my thoughts, feelings, and ideas weren't on par with my expectations. And so, you know, I think that there is a real case to be made when it comes to radical honesty of our pathetic selves. I know that's like, oh my God, what a blanket statement. No, let's you know, tear that apart a little bit more. Is, you know, your limitations are real. But you know, how did you surround that? What are you tethering that to? You know, in our own minds, you know, why do we have these, you know, it's almost like an invisible dog fence. As we approach the fence, we start to get scared, we start to get worried, we start to worry, and all the, like, everybody in the world is like this. And this is the reason why we're the best survivalist species on this planet, is because we get there and we go, ooh, I don't know. But let's face it, it's 2024, man. Like, I got a fridge full of food. I've got a warm bed. My home was warm to 19 degrees. I'm a Canadian. You know, and I am not in concern of dying. In any one race I've ever run, as depleted as I felt, I was very safe, extraordinarily safe. And so to reverse engineer that, you know, I have a feeling that's the superpower that girls like Camille Heron have, is when they're smiling, you know, on their 6-day race when breaking the world record. She's reverse engineering that at that present point. And, you know, that's her superpower. It's not, you know, the physical limits. It's the fact that she's clued into something that I think that ultra runners are desperately trying to clue into.
Yeah. And there is no quick fix. Fix isn't the right word, but there's no easy path or quick path to that sort of enlightenment. You know, I was talking to Stephanie Flippin earlier this week for Relay. So she's a member of the Relay podcast, and she was there. She's one of the 10 people sponsored by Lululemon. She's a professional runner, right? She's got like, you know, multi-year deal with them, and she's part of this project the whole time. And because of injury and she had significant COVID complications, she was unable to race the event. She ran running like 100 miles, but like for her, that's just kind of like a normal training week. For, you know, for all intents and purposes. So she was there in her science capacity because she is a doctor, and then also watching. And she, that was the thing that she mentioned on the podcast, was that like watching Camille, again, she's raced against Camille. She's friends with Camille before the Lululemon project even started. But she said that what she was able to see her up close and personal the entire time was that it became abundantly clear that this effort was decades in the making. That this was not the and not even from the physical perspective, and certainly it was from the physical perspective as well, but from the mental, emotional, problem solving, and everything that goes on between our two ears, that the necessary qualifications for her to do what she did was decades in the making in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I love about the ultra running community and how accessible everybody is. Just ask, you know, if you text Camille, she'll probably respond, which is like, you know, LeBron James or whomever, like, good luck getting
a
response.
We can stick to hockey if it makes you comfortable, Dave. We can talk.
Yeah,
hockey.
Yeah, of course. but I think that's what the wonderful thing is about our sport is that, you know, we're dealing with capacity. And, you know, as much as we want to, and it would be quite convenient for all of us to say, Camille Heron's just a different, you know, a different person altogether. Yeah. Okay. To a degree, but two things can be true at the same time.
She can also be different, but we can also learn.
And we could also learn. And I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write this book is I've been running ultramarathons for almost 20 years. And there are certain things that you either develop in your mental strategy, working with sports psychologists, your approach, your mindfulness approach, when it comes to these mega efforts that, you know, and I can't wait for like Camille's book to come out. I don't know if she's writing a book, but she should, because there's something that she's probably underplaying that is so freaking worthwhile for a community to go, huh, I never thought about it that way.
Right. You know? Whoever writes it also needs to write Courtney's book, because she's also hiding her secret powers too.
Oh, and I think that, I think that's what's so fascinating about the ultra running community. And I think that's like also a reason why I wrote this book is like, okay, you know, when I talk to runners, I forget that there are certain things that, you know, I've kind of figured out a little bit along the way that might be worthwhile and useful to somebody, you know, climbing their, whatever their next Everest is. Like, you know, it was my Canada, right? Whatever that is, if it's you running your very first marathon or wanting to come under that cutoff for that 100-mile distance, there's going to be something useful, especially mentally. Like physically, just put the hours in, do the physiological training. Like, we know what to do, right? But when it comes to the mindfulness approach, when it comes to, we see these outliers. And if we pay attention enough, you look at Courtney DeWalter and you're like, something's going on there. She's different than the other girls.
Yeah, for sure. Or boys, for that matter.
Everybody.
There's no question about it. I'm going to talk about a couple things. Again, basically, it's going to be the same question. I just want you to talk about your relationship to not just the, you know, the words, but what they signify, right? And they are pain, discomfort, fatigue, and motivation. And we can approach these all in one, because maybe the answer is the same for all of them, or we can kind of separate them. Maybe we'll take pain out of it. Let's stick with discomfort, right? Because like pain, unless someone's doing something like you did, like it was, you know, a historic effort, but, you know, I think for most people, they're not going to go on that kind of journey. It's going to be much more like, all right, if you are in pain, you should probably stop. Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas discomfort is something different. Right. So I'd love to hear about your evolution and how you approach these things and how it's evolved for you dealing with discomfort, fatigue, and motivation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll kind of circle back and maybe say I disagree a little bit about the pain and discomfort piece, because I fully understand that pain is like pain. Every day for the rest of your life, you will experience pain. So just start there. Right. But suffering is a choice, right? Not accepting that pain, you know, so many times I remember, you know, in my book in Nova Scotia, I write a chapter called This Is This. And This Is This, you know, talks about that day that I realized I broke my foot early in the run and my navicular and my foot, you know, was fractured and barks like a dog, smells like a dog.
To say nothing of your 9-millimeter tear of your plantar fascia. To say nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. And that got worse with the break, right? But I remember talking to my psychologist about that, and I said, you know, like that day, my sports psychologist, I was running down the highway, and I had her in my ear, and she said, "Well, how do you feel about that?" And I said, "Well, of course, I don't feel good about this. You know, I can't imagine running another 55 days with a broken foot." And she says, "Well, what about this step right now? How are you doing?" And I said, "It's uncomfortable, but I can do it." She's like, "Okay. All you have in the world is this, you know?" And so much pain, so much suffering is not accepting the pain that's current. So you're wanting it to be something else. you know, we desperately want our pain to go. We want our financial struggles to be gone. We want those wrinkles to be gone. So we want something to be different than what it currently is. But the moment that you can accept it for it, and ultimately this is this, you know, it's amazing that just that amount of suffering goes away and the pain is actually quite manageable. You can run across the country on broken foot. You shouldn't, but you could. And so, you know, just, you know, it's accepting pain and the acceptance of that, going, okay, this is exactly what this is. I don't want it to be any different. And I think that's one of the big differences between, you know, running across the country and running a 100-mile race is running a 100-mile race, you can remember yesterday when you were sitting on your sofa eating a bag of potato chips in complete comfort, and you compare what you're going through right now to what you were doing yesterday. And it's a stark difference. On day 35 running across the country, if somebody said, hey, don't you wish you were on the sofa eating a bag of potato chips? I'm like, I do not remember what that feels like. And so, you know, it's like you've totally accepted your current state. But, you know, back to your initial question about...
I'm actually going to jump in here before you do, because it ties into what you just said. Pardon the interruption. There's a quote. My phone's upstairs, so I can't look it up as you're talking. So I'll have to paraphrase it. And nor do I know who said it. But it's something to the effect of so much of the suffering that people endure are for actions in situations that never end up happening.
Right? Because
we future cast what's going to happen, and then we suffer all of it, but it never ends up coming to pass. And again, this isn't just about athletics, obviously.
No doubt. And ultimately, oh God, now I'm ruining my entire book. But the province of Ontario, for you Americans listening, if you know Canadian geography, is huge, right? The very first sign in Canada, you end up having kilometer markings that mark down or mark up how far you have to go to get across that province. And so I've run across four provinces. I think I'm on day like 20 or something. And the very first sign you see when you enter into the province of Ontario says 2,180 kilometers until you get to Manitoba. So run perfectly at 105 kilometers or 66 miles a day. That's 20 days, right? 20 and days. So, you know, how on earth do you stand there and looking out into the horizon and going, okay, I still have 20 days to get across this province. And then you got four more provinces to run after that. You know, how on earth does that not cripple anybody? That does that not take you to your knees? And so, you know, there's a mindfulness concept. It's called the art of non-striving. And, you know, it's so powerful in those moments, like in backyard races or in 100-mile races on 20 miles in, if you're like, oh my goodness, this is how I'm feeling at 20 miles in, how on earth am I going to run another 80 miles? Is you don't need to. Like there is not, the future is a fallacy. There is no such thing as a future. The future is made up of a bunch of presents. And so the best way to get there is to be here. And if you can totally wrap yourself up in only that this moment matters, this step, this breath, right? That's the most beautiful thing about, you know, mindfulness and taking a deep breath is you're reminded that all that matters in this world is this breath. And all of that suffering of the future things that haven't happened yet, they just go away like clouds in the sky. And it's the most beautiful freeing moment because all of a sudden at the end of the day or the end of the week or the end of the month, you are hell of a long ways across this country. And the only way you got there, the best way to get there is to be here, to be present, and to take one step at a time. And it's beautiful. So yeah, I couldn't agree more. That suffering is the idea of how terrible that future is going to be. But that's so stupid because it hasn't happened yet.
Right. All right. So how have you evolved with, say, like accumulated fatigue, right? Mm-hmm. So something that, you know, we have a lot of people who are training for marathons right now, whether that's Boston or London or name any other spring marathon people are going through and people are going to be listening to this podcast, you know, many seasons from now, right? So accumulated fatigue is something that's part and parcel with any, you know, endurance training cycle, to say nothing of the race itself. So what's been your journey getting to become friends with that process and how has it changed and how has things stayed the same?
Fatigue is earned. And it's like, you know, why would I ever be, and I don't have $1 million in my bank, keep in mind, but why would I ever look upon my bank account saying I have $1 million and go, ugh, you know? And the fact that I can wake up in the morning with tired legs and, you know, it's just such a beautiful gift that, you know, that I've earned, right? Because you could end up giving up on every run or every weight session. And so I think it's just accepting that this is what this is. You know, this is growth, and this is what needs to happen in order for me to get that. We see that in every other way, in business or in learning, you know, going through university and getting your master's or whatever. They're like, okay, you're going to have to sacrifice a lot, but yet somehow we seem to forget that in sport. And I think ultimately too, it's putting, oh, now I'm going down a tangent. It's putting a name to it and it's calling it out for what it is. And I remember there's a portion of my book that I talk about 8 or 10 years ago, I ended up, my kids are now 18, 15 and 13. So I used to read a lot to them, like Winnie the Pooh and on and so forth. And Winnie the Pooh is awesome because, you know, like Eeyore and Piglet, these are just feelings. And that's the most beautiful thing for children is like identifying your feelings, thoughts, concerns, worries. And why don't we do that as adults? Right. So out there on the highway, every single day when I was running, there was a salamander, there was a coyote, there was an eagle, and there was a dragon. And these were all representative of thoughts, feelings, ideas, concerns, pain, my pathetic self, but also the person that I wanted to be. And that dragon was who I ultimately wanted to be. And so you can end up physically looking out into the distance and seeing these characters playing out in real time. You know, that coyote that keeps biting me, and I've taken thousands and thousands of bites. You know, a lot of blood has been shed, but yet I'm still okay. I'm more afraid of the bite than the bite itself. And so by being able to having something that's in your arsenal in advance that you could say, this is my representation of pain, and something that can make sense. You're like, but am I really afraid of the bite? Because it hasn't really concluded in anything. What about that whispering voice in my ear, my salamander, who tells me that I'm not good enough, I'm not strong enough, and people don't like me? You know, that, you know, hey, that's enough. You should sit down and take a break or eat that second bowl of ice cream or whatever it is. You know, to look outside of him and say, okay, you're trying to tether me. You're trying to keep me safe, but I am very safe in this 2024 world. And so, you know, if you could put a name to it in a time of distress, because that's what running is, it's distress. I find that personally, you can create resilience from within at a time where everybody else is crumbling.
You've obviously spent a lot of time cultivating a mindful approach to running and have done it with people to help you along that path. How do you combine or move around with mindfulness while also being someone who values competition?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. Because yeah, they do, you know, oppose one another, don't they?
Sometimes. Obviously, mindfulness can help in a competition, but there are times where they are definitely at odds with each other.
They are. And I think that's one of the beautiful things. We were just talking about the examined run. I picked that up the other day. And, you know, that discussion about how, you know, running it brings out the very best in us and also the very worst in us. Right. And
man,
it's
I can identify with that, man, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, I think runners are the very best people in the world, but we also have the opportunity to be the very worst in the world. And so competition is good as long as it's cultivated properly. And so what I've done to kind of mitigate that is, you know, I know when I'm being the person that I want to be. You know, I think it's, you know, we all know, you know, who our parents raised. We all know when we watch TV, that person, that's a bad person. This person, that's a good person. And we know where to aim. So ultimately, I don't think competition is a very bad thing. I think internal competition, being competitive against yourself. If there were two Daves that were running and, you know, the one Dave was going to give up and the other Dave was leaning forward with a can-do attitude, I want the can-do attitude Dave to appear and to take over and to beat the Dave who was going to give up. I think that there in psychology, there's a term called parts work. That's, you know, really interesting when it comes to endurance and running. And it's asking yourself, like, I'm a father of three, right? There's a different Dave who shows up parenting. Then there's a different Dave who's in the kitchen cooking or trying a new recipe. There's a different Dave who's out there on the highway running across the country. And then there's a different Dave who is, you know, a compassionate listener to when your friends are having a really hard day. Asking those individuals to show up at different times. Sometimes in my parenting, you know, that compassionate parent, you know, needs to step aside, and that Dave and the cowboy hat running across the country in record time needs to show up and be a little bit tougher on the kids, because that long-term gain is necessary. And so, you know, kind of pairing your, you know, the eight different me's inside and the eight different you's against one another, there's nothing wrong with that type of competition. But I think that there is something wrong with wanting destruction upon another person and not having that growth. And I feel that all the time. I go onto social media, I'm like, oh, that guy. It's like, that's not your best self, Dave. You know, don't do that.
Well said. Now, how do you, you mentioned before, you failed plenty of times, more than people mm-hmm. would ever know just by, you know, picking up your book or listening to this podcast or what have you. And that sort of internal competition, oftentimes, especially when failure is involved and certain expectations aren't reached, can be debilitating, right? It can mm-hmm. stop us from pursuing the next big goal or going after the big goal that's been there the whole time that we just can't reach. What's been your process with that? Because this is something that I know can affect people of any fitness level, including the host right here.
Mm. And so you're asking is like, what's the process in getting through that?
Yeah, because that disappointment, right, that leaves us so internally wounded, where we have this internal competition with ourselves, or we have this feeling of, I want to do this, and now I feel like, oh my God, this is never going to happen, or I'm embarrassed, mm-hmm. or there's shame, or there's the guilt that goes along with running, especially as a parent, because you have to, you can't run and be with your kids at the same time, you know, most of the time, and all of those things, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, maybe I should just run. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm going to sign up for any more races. I'm just going to run.
Right. I think it's understanding, trying your very best, given your resources, to try to understand why you're feeling what you're feeling. Like, you think about, you know, how you were raised, your parents, your brothers and sisters. You know, you might be ultra competitive because you were the youngest of five siblings. You know, and all of those things make their mark. And they create this spiral of shame. They create this spiral of competition. They create this spiral of your default mechanism that, you know, ultimately left unsaid will just kind of run the roost later on in life. But at times those things don't serve you, right? And so to be able to try your very best to go, okay, I'm triggered by this. Let's not focus on who's triggering me. Let's focus on, why am I so bothered by this? And let's start to unpack that, because often in times, if we ask ourselves, you know, why are we, you know, not able to circumnavigate this or succeed past this, it's not anybody else's doing. You know, it's how we feel about something that happened in our lives. And I think as well too, it's, you know, to answer, you know, that question in a different roundabout way is looking at your own faith and looking at, you know, what are you hanging on to? What are some belief sets that you tend to truly believe, or that you you hang every thought and feeling about. And, you know, does it make sense? There's different, you know, religious teachings from Christianity to Buddhism to Hinduism. You know, I take one Buddhist, you know, thing that I do every day. I've got an app on my phone that sends me 5 text messages every day that reminds me about my own imminent mortality, that you're going to die. And it says, oh, hey, sorry about this, but you're going to die. And there's an old Buddhist saying that says that those who contemplate their own mortality more than 5 times a day tend to lead greater existences, because when you know you're going to die, you tend to live. And so the amount of times that I'm sitting on my toilet for 30 minutes scrolling Instagram, that I'm existing, and you're like, and you know, it's so funny because like those text messages from, you know, it's an app called WeCroak. They pop up in those moments. I remember when I was running Cross Canada, you'd get a pop-up on your phone when you started walking a hill and you're like, don't forget, you're going to die. And I'm like, okay, I see you there. You know, like, that's, you know, we only get one chance to live. You know, I'm going to be an old man one day, looking back upon my life and knowing that I gave it my all. Or do I want to be that guy who looks back upon my life and says, you know, these unfinished businesses that I, the belief sets that I created when I was 5 and 7 and 10 years old, when I was a kid, that seemed to run my life, that held me back. Did I just say, well, you know, this is this. So therefore I'm going to give up on myself, or therefore I'm going to create distress where there doesn't need to be distress, or I'm going to start blaming my spouse when it really ultimately could just be that, you know, hey, I was lazy and I need to be held accountable today. Whatever it is, we get one chance to do this. And, you know, I reminded every day that I'm going to die. And so therefore, you know, you have a choice. And my choice is to live.
I love that. And I love how you approach it in terms of, all right, I'm going to die, so this is a great reason, or maybe even the best reason, not to procrastinate on the things that matter to me, as opposed to taking it the other way, which I can imagine someone maybe a little too self-involved, just basically taking the nihilistic approach. Like, it doesn't matter. I could die in any moment. I'll do whatever, you know, I can basically live, you know, the devil may care kind of vibe. But I like how you approach it a lot better. So I want to ask a question here. It's going to seem very superficial, but I think it will, I think the lessons from it will broaden out into not only your thought process throughout the TransCon, but also things that we can all take to our own lives. And that is about weather. And what a great topic, right? No, but I was thinking about this because how you had to approach weather on the TransCon seems like a two-step process. It seems like, and I'd love to hear more about this from you, this is how I viewed it as I was listening and reading your book, was there's the superficial part, and I don't mean that in a negative way, just in a positive way. It's like, okay, I need to dress for the weather. I need to plan for the weather. I need to make sure I have the gear on me and in my pack that's necessary for me to do what I need to do today. But at the same time, you can't obsess about the weather. No. Because that's a negative, right? So being aware of the weather is both positive and negative. So I'd love for you to explain how you approach this, because I feel like this could be illustrated for much more than just this one topic.
It's something you can't control. Is it going to be hot? Is it going to be cold? Is it going to rain? Is it going to snow? Is it going to be windy? Like the biggest issue when you're running on the highway all day, every day, is the biggest concern is wind. You know, and wind can get to you. Like when you're running on a highway in one direction and you've got a crazy headwind.
Wind is the worst weather of all the weathers. Wind is the worst.
Absolutely. Because, you know, and to be honest with you, if you looked at your heart rate data, you looked at your pace chart, does it slow you down? A tiny little bit. I mean, if you're racing like a 10K or a marathon or something, for sure, right? On the highway, you're not doing that. Like you're plodding along. And so does it really make a big difference? No. But does it make a big difference mentally? Because it feels like you're fighting against something, like God is against you today. You know, it's easy to go there, right? It's easy to go there. And so you preparation and being ready and being able to change your plan on the fly, you know, plan the run the plan, but don't fall in love with the plan. If you need to shorten up you know, the times that you saw your crew members to change into warm clothes and to extend a day because, hey, I don't want to have hypothermia out here. Or you have to re-lube because it's raining all day, or changing out your shoes because, you know, those blisters are going to form because, hey, I need a dry pair of shoes every once in a while or else this blister is going to get out of hand. You know, that is only natural, and but you need to focus on it, but don't obsess about it. And also, you ain't no victim out here. Everybody who's going to do a transcon is going to be dealing with weather. And so anybody who's on that next race that you're going out to, a 50-mile race course or whatever it is, everybody's dealing with the same freaking weather. And so you ain't a victim. And I get it. Like, when you're in despair, when you're tired, you know, victimhood is something that's taught to us. I mean, hell, I don't know how things are in America right now, but in Canada, turn on the news and 70, 80% of every news, you know, feed is telling you that you're a victim and that you're hard done by. And I freaking hate that, because more than not, you know, you look at every situation, you know, I could walk into my kitchen and you know, see that the dishes aren't done. And I could go, oh, hey, the dishes aren't done. Lana must be busy on a work call. Or I could say, hey, I'm a victim here. And nothing good comes from victim state. And so, you know, I think the weather is a perfect analysis of everything that can be thrown your way, because, hey, you know what? There's nothing you can really do about it. And this is this. And so try to make a situation, any situation, you know, a different situation or better situation, but just accept it for what it is. And the fact that you can do hard things. Yeah, it's not ideal that it's raining all day. It's not ideal that it's stupidly hot. But create smart workarounds that you can end up employing, you know, out there, that, you know, that can get you through that moment the very best way that you can. Yeah, I think that's just be willing to adapt.
Yeah, the acceptance piece is important because it's vital. Like, you have to accept it, right? Accept it, then you're going to be in a bad state. Then you will be hypothermic. Then you will have the blisters, right? So you have to be aware and you have to accept it. But you have to accept without obsession.
Right. Yeah, and yeah, the acceptance piece is just everything. And like, in any state, if you could accept what you're currently going through, your effort is like one quarter as much as what everybody else is feeling. Those people, like, I always love like backyard races, because you're always like running along with others, and you could see when somebody's unraveling because they cannot accept their current state, and you see it and you could hear it, and they're all grumpy, and you're like, oh, you know, that's a bad mental space, right? You know, these guys, you know, as we're recording this, the Barkley Marathons is happening right now, and these guys that are out there on the course, you know, the reason why they're out there, you know, on the fifth loop is they've accepted their current state, and there's no doubt if they've made it this far, they're going to finish. But those who can't accept it early on, like one and two loops in, you're done. Just get off the course.
Dave, I love this conversation so much. There's so much meat on the bone here, and then you were able to really, you know, feed us all with it. Again, I can't recommend your book highly enough, Untethered by Dave Proctor. Now available on audiobook. So for the people who listen to this, I'm sure you already have an Audible subscription. Go check it out. Dave, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks so much, Matt. It was a lot of fun.